All right, and I want to make sure that I'm saying these right. Ben Riach. Oh gosh, Ben Riach.
I can say it.
Well, no, I want to be able to like introduce it and kind of talk about it. So Ben Riach.
I want to hear him fumble.
Glenn Dronach, so. Right? And then Glenn Glassa.
Have a glass of Glenn Glassa.
Okay.
Have a glass of Glenn Glassa.
I must weave that one in now that I thought of it.
You should make them pay you for that idea.
I'm going to butcher this so bad.
Happy New Year, everybody. It is episode 234 of Bourbon Pursuit. And with the new year, it comes time that we can all reflect back and start with a clean slate. It gives us a chance to focus on where things are exciting and where we see change happening. And we looked at the world of bourbon and saw that there's too much drama. So we explored what else in this wonderful world of whiskey has to offer. And we decided that we're going to start venturing off into scotch. So now you can look forward to a whole lot more scotch podcasts happening in 2020. All right, that was a bad joke. We're not going to be doing any of that. We don't have any other Scotch Plain episodes except for this one you're going to hear today, so you're in the clear. All right, now let's get on with the news. The bourbon world lost another great on Christmas Day of 2019 with the passing of Al Young from Four Roses. Al served in various roles at Four Roses for 52 years. In 1990, he became distillery manager, and in 2007, was named Four Roses Bourbon Brand Ambassador. He was also a historian and published the book Four Roses, The Return of a Whiskey Legend in 2010. Al was inducted into the Whiskey Magazine Hall of Fame in 2015, and he's also a member of the Kentucky Distillers Association, Kentucky Bourbon Hall of Fame. After the dedication of the 50th anniversary bottle in 2017, he was boosted in the spotlight and he was regularly seen during private barrel selections. We captured him telling the story of Four Roses and part of his career way back on episode 3 in 2015. Our thoughts and prayers go out to his family, friends, and the entire Four Roses community. We covered this in the podcast way back in July because on July 3rd, 2019, lightning struck a warehouse at Beam's Maturation Complex on the site of the former Old Crow Distillery on McCracken Road. The warehouse held an estimated 40,000 barrels of whiskey and collapsed, resulting in a fire. The site is located on the banks of the Glens Creek, which flows into the Kentucky River, which eventually goes into the Ohio River. State Fish and Wildlife investigators later found dead fish along 62 miles of all three waterways, with the most impact happening in Glens Creek in the Kentucky River. Beam Suntory has agreed to pay the state of Kentucky more than $700,000 following the environmental damage from July's warehouse fire. According to Louisville's Courier-Journal, the Kentucky Energy and Environmental Cabinet negotiated a $600,000 fine with the company's Jim Beam's brand unit, an additional $112,000 to reimburse the agency for its expenses from the fire. Now, we've talked about the rise of shipping alcohol in the podcast plenty of times before, but now there are studies coming out. The volume of liquor sold online in the U.S. should be more than quadrupled by 2024, reaching an estimated value of $13.4 billion. And this is according to IWSR, who is the global benchmark for beverage alcohol and data intelligence. Now, there are hurdles that come along with this. You've got the antiquated three-tier system. You get blue laws in individual states that take care of age verification. And you also have perception, because half of the people that were surveyed during this thought that purchasing online was illegal. With companies like Drizly leading the charge, along with other retailers using things like Instacart for Costco, people like this are doing same-day delivery. Expect to see more that can happen in 2020. Thank you to everyone who supported the Bourbon Pursuit Christmas Charity Raffles. We raised $13,740 for the USO, Pets for Vets, and Love City. We appreciate everyone who took the time to donate to these good causes, and the winners, you'll be receiving your items in the mail over the next 2 weeks. We've been truly impressed by our latest Pursuit Series offerings. Episode 18 of Pursuit Series was our first ever rye barrel, and it came from Finger Lakes Distilling. It's a four-year-old, but it packs fruit and spice all in one for $65. And we also released episode 19, which is from our Tennessee stock. It's a 10-year-old bourbon, and it tastes like those orange push-ups that we all used to love as kids. We have less than 15 bottles remaining of episode 18 and about 80 bottles left of episode 19. We also have less than 10 bottles remaining of episode 12, so you better act fast. You can get the links to purchase all these by going to pursuitspirits.com. This was an exciting episode for Ryan and I. We don't know anything about scotch, like none. At least when we started this podcast, we were curious about bourbon, and we started to learn a whole lot more before really diving into it. So what better way to get the full experience about scotch than by having Dr. Rachel Berry, who is a master blender for multiple lines of scotches, come on the show and show us the ropes. We talk about malting, peat, regulations to be considered a scotch, temperatures, and a whole lot more. This is a fantastic 101 to the scotch world, and even made us not so much scotch curious, but more so single malt curious. Since this recording, we've tried various American and foreign single malts and found some that we've really loved and enjoyed. So there's a lot more out there than bourbon for most of us. Now, sit back, let's relax, let's hear what Joe from Barrel Bourbon has to say, and then you've got Fred Minnick with Above the Char.
I'm Joe Beatrice, founder of Barrel Craft Spirits. We explore whiskey in an entirely new way. My team at Barrel Craft Spirits selects and blends barrels of whiskey into something greater than the sum of their parts. Next time, ask your bartender for Barrel Bourbon.
I'm Fred Minnick, and this is Above the Char. There are a few people you meet in life where they just instantly feel like they're a brother or a family member or someone who just cares so deeply about another human being that they would just do anything for a total stranger. That's who Al Young was. Al Young was probably the most knowledgeable person in bourbon that never wanted any credit. Al Young was this incredible brand ambassador for Four Roses, who had started working for the Seagram's Company in 1967 and had been all over the place in the distilling business. You know, to me, the pinnacle of his career was when he served as the plant manager for Four Roses. Everybody talks about the master distiller, but Al was the plant manager. And when it came time to retire, they found another job for him because they didn't want to let him go. Because anybody who ever met Al Young just felt this kismet kind of special relationship to him. He was avuncular, caring, kind, and he wanted to know about you. That's what made Al Young so special, was that it was about bourbon and he loved Four Roses, but it was never about really anything other than the people. Al wanted to know where you grew up, how many kids you have, what you love about whiskey, what you don't like. He wanted to talk to you and learn about you. And so when he passed away on Christmas Day this past week, I think a lot of us felt that. We felt this big hole that we lost a friend. And yeah, we always talked about how we lost a whiskey legend. But more than anything, Al was everybody's friend. And if you ever did a barrel pick with him, if you ever shook his hand, if you ever had a drink with him in a bar or had a sandwich in a cafe, you know what I'm talking about. Al Young was one of a kind, and he will be missed. And that's this week's Above the Char. If you want to learn more about Al Young's contributions, go check out my Forbes article. Visit Forbes.com, and you should also check out the book he wrote about Four Roses. You can just find it on Amazon. Search for Four Roses. Until next week, cheers.
Welcome back to another episode of Bourbon Pursuit, the official podcast of bourbon. Kenny and Ryan here on site in another studio. We're at Brown Forman Studio.
Yes.
But today we're talking about a topic that's so green to us. Like we got this email from Andrea who set this up, and I said, let's take it. Let's do the opportunity because we need to branch out a little bit because we've been so bourbon focused in our podcasts and in our lives. We forget about this. Oh, there's this whole other world of whiskey that we're not even touching on. And that actually, if you look at it, sort of trumps even what bourbon does on the global map too.
Oh, yes. But by far. And it was funny on the way here, I was thinking like, all right, what are we going to talk about? And then like start thinking like when you're like in your 20s, early 20s, you like kind of make all these rules for yourself. Like, I will never pay someone to mow my lawn, or my kids won't be the ones that screaming at the restaurant. And another rule for me was, because I'm from Bardstown, I will never drink scotch. But today I'm changing that, and I'm excited to learn about it and drink some scotch.
I know. So. It's going to be exciting to do that, and that's really why we have – and this is what I love about this, is that we have a guest on today that is pretty world-renowned, especially for the scotches that she blends and she touches. You know, I think we might be a little jaded. We might be sitting in the bounds of royalty right now, not even really recognize it.
Yeah, we're peasants in the scotch game, so.
So let's go ahead and introduce our guest today. So today we have Rachel Berry. Rachel is the master blender for Benrack, the Glendronach, Glenglassinaugh. I hope I got that right, for single malt scotch whiskies in the Brown Forman portfolio. So Rachel, welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me. It's great to be here.
You did well with those, Kenny.
Yeah, I know.
Beforehand, he was kind of fumbling through. It was kind of quite comical.
Because we want a glass of Glenglassinaugh. Is that how it was?
Well, I said a glass of Glenglassinaugh.
See, that sounds.
I have a very basic question to start us off. While the Glens and Bens, what, like, there's, you know, Glenlivet, Glenmorangie, Glenglassinaugh, you know, what's the Glen name?
With altitude, really.
Okay.
So Glendronach is very deep down in the Valley of Brambles. So it's a glen.
Okay.
And Glenglassinaugh is deep down beside the sea.
Okay.
So you have to, again, go down into Glenglassinaugh. And then Benriach is a little bit higher altitude.
We call those haulers here.
Really?
We call them haulers.
You go down to the hauler.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You go fishing down
perhaps.
In the hauler.
Exactly.
You can go fishing there, absolutely. You can go surfing there.
Oh, no. There's no surfing in the haulers.
We've got surfing. Yeah. We're by the sea.
Okay, cool.
Yeah. And then Benriach is a slightly higher altitude. So it's a Ben.
Okay.
Yeah.
And so I'm assuming the altitudes do something to the whiskey that really kind of push into the name as it as well.
Yeah, everything makes a difference with Scotch. I mean, Scotch whiskey's been around since 1494, if not for centuries before. That was our earliest recorded evidence. And we've got 128 distilleries in Scotland.
Mm-hmm.
And no two distilleries are the same. It's the spirit with the greatest diversity of style and individuality of character in the world.
Oh, and we're going to be tasting through those a little bit later.
We'll dive into those. I'll probably jumped ahead. Kenny's itinerary or objectives here.
Altitude is a part of it. Well, it's a part of it. It's one part of many parts.
Okay.
Glad we got that.
So it's kind of like, you know, Pinots. You kind of grow Pinot Noir and the wine. You kind of grow in the more lower humid regions. And then you have grapes in the higher regions that get more sun, and it's kind of gives different flavors, right?
Yeah, it affects the maturation. It affects the fermentation. Where the distillery is.
Gotcha. Cool.
And so you're based out of Scotland too, is that correct?
Absolutely.
Where in Scotland?
Well, I was born 5 minutes from Glendronach Distillery, and I was brought up there. And then I went to Edinburgh University, and the head office, the Brown Forman production head office, is in Edinburgh for the Scotch whiskies.
There we go.
So you're destined to be in Scotch.
Absolutely. And, you know, I've come home working for Glendronach. And Benriach and Glenglassinaugh, because, say, born near Glendronach, I learned to surf with my dad at Glenglassinaugh, and I learned to glide at Benriach.
That's cool. So I guess talk about growing up around it. I mean, was your family have an influence into it at all, or was it just something that you just kind of naturally gravitated towards?
Well, my dad was the first to share with me a wee dram when I was far too young. I shouldn't say this to be having a wee dram.
That's okay. I think everybody's had the story. Yeah.
And he also collects malt, so he was a big malt aficionado. It's more actually being involved in farming as well. You know, it's more that side of things than distilling. But yeah, it was serendipity getting into it, really. Because I'm a chemist by trade, mm-hmm. and I could have worked for oil or, you know, pharmaceuticals and got offered jobs with those. But then I just happened to be cycling past the career service. On the last day, a job was advertised at the Scotch Whiskey Research Institute. Didn't even know such a job existed, and got the job. And then I've never looked back. Four years and researching the alchemy of Scotch and then making it. So
that's
been a
better fun
journey.
Now, the other thing we forgot to mention, you're also a doctor of the trade. Am I correct as well?
Last year I got an honorary doctorate from the University of Edinburgh. So I was honored to be given that.
I feel even worse about myself now.
not only are you staying at Hands of Greatness, we're also a doctor in front of us.
Well, I actually studied medicine first as well. It's quite funny.
Well, whiskey is medicine.
You know. It sure is. That's what I say. You know, a wee dram a day keeps a doctor a day.
Yep.
Away.
How much have you been drinking already today? No, I'm just kidding. On that. So let's talk a little bit more about, you know, your history, going, because I know that you've had your hands in a lot of the glens and bends of the region as well before you were a master blender here at Brown-Forman taking care of the brands here. So kind of talk about some of that history too.
Yeah, I mean, I started off with a glen in the far north of Scotland, two glens, Glenmorangie, Glenmurray, and then also Isla with Arbeg, and worked with their blends as well, creating them. So that was a fun journey. That was 16, 17 years. And then moved to Beaumont, worked more with Isla. Mm-hmm. And with the Highlands, with another glen, and also with the Lowlands, with a Glasgow distillery. And then a couple more Islas and another Highland. But I've left the best to last working with Brown-Forman because it's truly going home. Mm-hmm. So I've done my whiskey exploration.
Yeah, you've seen them all.
Yeah.
Whenever I see a bottle of Glenmorangie, I'm like, does it taste like oranges or, you know, like, I don't know. It looks like an orange bottle. Like, I don't know. What's the difference between, like, you talked about Isla. I guess that's where Laphroaig and, you know, different types of brands. What makes the region different?
The region's one part. It's one part. I mean, a lot of it is down to the conditions. So,
You're right, because I hear people talk about Speyside and stuff like that, too.
Well, Speyside's got 50 to 60 distilleries in it, so it's where most of the distilleries are. And Benriach is right in the heart of Speyside, halfway between the mountain and the sea, and it's beautifully balanced. It tends to be, fruit-laden malts are from Speyside, so Benriach is particularly fruit-laden, like orchard fruit. So everything makes a difference, shape of the stills, the water, the barley. And then the Highlands, there's actually, with Glendronach, there's actually very few distilleries in the Eastern Highlands. There's only three. So Glendronach is incredibly distinctive. And it's a real old style, old school malt.
Well, what makes it an old school? Because you got to understand, we're coming to this to be like we know mash bills.
Let's start at the basics of scotch. Like, what is in scotch versus a bourbon?
Okay,
like,
here we go. We've only got, for malt whiskey anyway, single malt, and that's the category that's growing. That's what people are really loving, and we've got three award-winning top distilleries. Three ingredients, malted barley, so it has to be malt for a single malt whiskey.
Is there a percentage in that? Like, sir, does there a certain
100% malt.
Gotcha.
There we go.
So when you go the tour, it's like, it has to be 100% malt.
For a single malt
like
distillery.
Here, they're always like 51% corn. You know, that's the thing you
100%
hear.
100% malt, because malted barley is the most complex material you can create flavor from in the world.
Okay.
There's hundreds of flavor compounds created from malted barley. And therefore...
Why is that versus other grains?
Because it's just full of amino acids, of lipids, as well as the starch that gives you the sugars. So there's just so much. And on the husk, you even get vanilla, you get citrus. There's so much to be extracted and converted by the yeast into flavor. So it's much, much more than just alcohol. So in fermentation, you actually create the same flavors as you would do in a wine. So, you know, people often say, oh, how do you get this grapiness from malt? I'm like, malt is magical. It just creates all this flavor. And that's why no two distilleries are the same. It's a very complex material. And it's the synchronicity of where the distillery is, every single step of the process, that creates quite a distinctive character.
I was about to say, how do you keep that consistent between the distilleries? Because I would imagine that, you know, one farmer's barley that you had to bring in and malt, like you had to have some sort of process to try to get a consistency.
Yeah.
But I mean, there's always going to be some sort of variations.
Yeah. I mean, the malted barley varieties per year might be slightly different, more to do with the harvest. But generally, you know, most of Scotland will be growing the same varieties because mm-hmm. They're the ones that are working and, you know, are disease resistant and grow and give you the highest yield. I mean, the malting process can affect it. At Benriach, we've got our own maltings, which is something really special. One of only two distilleries of those, you know, 55 distilleries in Scotland that to have the old maltings. So that adds, you know, something special. We don't malt all year, but we do batches.
For somebody that doesn't know, can you describe what malting or malt is?
Okay, malting is just bringing
the barley. And that somebody
barley.
Might be me.
Yeah. Is bringing the barley to life. So the barley is harvested, spring barley is harvested in August, and then it will be malted typically, you know, in the autumn, or it can be kept as just the green barley, as we call it, before it's malted for longer and malted in the spring. But malting means that you basically steep it in water.
Okay.
So you're giving it some moisture, which is encouraging it to grow.
Yep.
And the growing phase is called germination, yep. And that's where the malt is laid out on the floor. And the old style is with a, you know, to shovel it, basically, a malt shovel, to turn it. So it stops it from
sprouting?
All knitting together. It stops it from knitting together with the sprouts.
Okay.
And it ensures an even temperature. And this allows the enzymes to start working and fooling the barley into thinking it's growing.
Right.
Because given it those conditions. And so when we've got the enzymes just perfect and the barley is modified so that it's activate those enzymes, it's then we need to stop it. And that is done through malt kilning. And that's where the germinated barley is raised onto a malting floor. And beneath that, there is heat, and that's the kiln.
Okay.
Traditionally, peat was used in most distilleries, going way, way, way back. But then, you know, in the 20th century, there was gas, et cetera. So most distilleries these days are unpeated. With Benriach, we've got both. So we're very lucky to have both. But peat itself is found a lot in Scotland. For Benriach, we source it from nearby, the distillery. And there was Caledonian forests 10,000 years ago. And over 10,000 years, the Caledonian forest has broken down over time, mm-hmm. over this time, and created the peat that we use. So our peat, actually, you can see fibers in it, almost like fibers of wood.
So is this like sphagnum peat moss or anything like that type? Or
no, this is more like woodrich.
Woodrich, okay.
And this is because it's from the northeast where gotcha. We do have Caledonian forests. Whereas if you went to Islay, which is an island off the west coast, which makes the most, I suppose, the highest density of peated whiskies.
And when you say peat, is it peat moss?
It's peat moss,
yeah,
sorry.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Peat moss and also...
Only because I use peat moss. I have an agriculture, like turf management.
I was about to say, he's finally,
a turf
he's finally
management,
putting his college degree
to
work
like,
here.
Horticulture degree, and we use we use peat moss to like improve soil profiles and textures because it's rich in organic matter.
There
and
you
all
go.
That stuff,
well,
so.
It's all that organic
see?
Matter,
yeah,
you see,
exactly, yeah.
That's decayed over 10,000 years, uh-huh. and in different parts of the geography of Scotland, you have, you know, different types of vegetation. And when you burn the peat, which fuels the fire that malts the barley. The aromas from that material, that vegetation, permeate the barley. So this introduces smoky flavors. And, you know, more on Islay, you'll find something more medicinal, more seaweedy, decaying mm-hmm. sweet seaweed type of smell.
Yep.
Whereas with Benriach, it's that sweet wood smoke, almost like a barbecue smell. I think people in Kentucky would love it. You know, it's really, really sweet.
And I guess that's based on the native vegetation there.
Absolutely. But also in Speyside, this is very, very rare, right? We peat every year we do a batch. So it's around 15% of what we do. And then I get to have fun playing tunes with the peat and the unpeated stock and with flavour and create flavour. So it's great fun. But space I typically is unpeated malts. Mm-hmm. They tend to have most of your glens. So Ben Rieck's really very bold and adventurous in having.
Is there anything like a peat shortage, or is that ever worried? Like,
no, we've
you know,
got enough
people
peat.
Here talk about, you know, usage of oak or whatever. They're like, oh, Ukrainian oak shortage. They ever complain about they're all using all our peat?
We've got plenty of peat.
Okay, cool.
Don't worry about the peat. There's plenty of peat.
Gotcha.
Doesn't actually take that much peat to create the smoke, to fuel the fire, etc. So it's all relative, isn't it? Probably use more in your horticulture.
Yeah. It's the dang farmers and weekend gardeners.
Well, see, I was kind of curious about, like, what was the shift of moving away from peat? Was it just inefficiencies of scale, or was it a change in flavor that people were looking for? Like, what was the – because you said most distilleries are kind of shifting away from that.
Historically, it was more to do with the fact that we could get natural gas to dry the barley, which is more efficient, and also better for the environment overall. So yeah,
good. Very cool.
But
so I think we hit step one.
All right, we got the barley, and then we're malting it, and then we're kilning it to dry it out to stop the germination process. All right, where are we at? Step C.
Next step. Oh, we get the malted barley in to mill it.
Okay.
So we have to put it in a mill, and there's two different types of mill and distilleries, Porteous or a Bobby mill, and they've got four different rollers. And when it goes through the mill, this cracks open the husk, which is the surface of the barley, and then it goes down to the next level of rollers, and it gives you three different particle sizes, which are the husk on the outside of the barley, the grist in the middle, and the flour. And you have to get the perfect combination to give you the best taste and to get the most extraction.
How do you get the perfect combination?
Well, you just know what's right for you.
Gotcha.
And then you can use a sieve and you work out your different particle sizes, percentages.
Gotcha.
It's actually a really simple process for the guys to do at the distillery.
Kind of analogous to like the corn that we take and, you know, basically churn into a powdered form when we're sitting there getting ready to do our mash.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I guess that would probably be analogous.
Too almost. Much flour or powder is not good because it would clog up the mash tun.
Okay.
Okay, it would give you lots of alcohol, and also it's not as good for flavor. Husk is great because it gives us a filter bed in the mash tun, and we want to produce a clear wort. Okay, so when we drain it off, it filters through. And then the grist is the majority at 70% in the middle size particles. Gives us great flavor and alcohol.
Awesome. All right. So we're moving past the mills. Where are we going next?
We're going into the mash tun.
All right.
And there's different sort of mash tuns in Scotch. At Glendronach, we've got a copper mash tun, which goes right back to 1826. It's incredible. Lots of contact with copper. It's a traditional rake and plough. It's a very slow process. It takes 6 hours to mash. Ben Rieck also takes a long time to mash, very slow, where some more efficient, bigger distilleries might take 3 hours.
Okay.
But we believe slow and steady wins the race.
That's right. The tortoise always wins when I read the story.
Yeah, absolutely. You
know Peter Pan, do you know the tortoise? You know,
Yeah. Well, you get complexity in whiskey if you take your time.
That's right.
So with Ben Rieck, for example, we add one water at around 60, 65 degrees. We mash this and then we drain it off through the filter bed. And then we add another water at a higher temperature, around 74, and we drain it off. And they both go into the fermentation process. And then we add two more waters, which just clean it all out and go back into the first water from the next run.
Sour mash water. Is that kind of what we're thinking here?
So we basically are great economists in Scotland. We don't let any drop go to waste.
Yeah. And so with fermentation, are you all hanging your hat on, like, this is our own yeast we've had for since 1400 or whatever you said.
Well,
or,
do you know, we've got great distiller's yeast that the whole industry uses, which are perfect for Scotch. So we've got a distiller's yeast that's perfect for Scotch. But when we ferment as well, you know, this is where a bit of the magic comes in. You know, we've got washbacks that, you know, air does, the natural flora can get into, so it can influence the fermentation as well.
Mm-hmm. Open air tanks, kind of sort of thing. I gotcha.
Well, at Glendronach we have Scottish larch washbacks, Scottish larch. It's a wood.
Oh, okay.
Type of wood.
See, he knew exactly. He was nodding his head. He's like, yeah, don't you know. Yeah. I'm like, I got nothing here. So.
It's a wood. So,
sorry,
yeah.
Kenny. It's not computers.
Well, I was like, you know, you think about some distilleries we go to, and they've got the cypress tanks. You know, that's, I understand that. But yeah, this is another species.
So Scottish larch. And therefore, you know, it can breathe. You can never get it fully cleaned. But that's great because it gets more of the microflora.
Yeah. Yeah, that funk.
Character,
yeah, or funk, yeah. The character, yes. Funk's a good thing.
Robust
character. Yes.
Robust, yeah. Highland character.
Yes, that's how royalty says it. Yeah. Like another word. All right, so we're through fermentation. I'm soon distilling copper stills, right? Pot stills.
Oh, copper pot stills.
Yeah.
And no distilleries.
No column
copper
stills ever.
Never column stills for malt. Never.
Okay. And why is that?
Yeah, I was like saying, it's because it's pretty efficient in what we see around here. That's kind of what a lot of the distilleries hang their hats on, are doing a lot of bourbon and a lot of runs at once, is basically using a really massive column stills.
We have one of the most inefficient processes. Incredible complexity of flavor. It's all about the flavor at the end of the day. And with single malt in particular, there's lots going on. So you want to take one cut that's special for your distillery in the second distillation. So there's two distillations, typically, in Scotch. The first one's called the wash still, tends to be the bigger still, and the second one is the spirit still. In the first still, you distill the beer from around 8% alcohol up to around 24%, and that's called the low wines. And then you take the low wines, which is 24, and to the second still, the spirit still, and we cut the middle point. So when it's distilling over, with Benriach, for example, 13 minutes, we just recycle. So we cut it. It goes into one chamber. Mm-hmm. And then the middle heart goes into another chamber, and that is for filling into cask. And then the tails, I go back into that first chamber, and then they're all recycled.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So it's a very slow process, but it means that we capture very specific flavors. And then the still design has an influence as well. So at Benriach, we've got very pear-shaped stills. They just look like beautiful pears. And this captures almost a fruity pear drop apple character. It's like an apple orchard. In the stills. Whereas at Glendronach, we have almost like saxophone stills. Very unusual design, certainly in terms of the neck. It curls round, up and down, just like a swan's neck. And this is very, very unusual. So we have a boil ball that gives you lots of reflux, and then the swan's neck. So we get this unique character.
How many different kinds of stills have you seen over your course of time, you know, with all the different kinds? So, I mean, there's not kind of like a good recipe that everybody kind of follows along. Like around here, everybody goes, oh, let's just call Vendome and we'll
call it a day.
Write a check and then all
of a sudden. Is there a Vendome of Scotland?
Well, there's a Forsyth's, Coppersmiths. Mm-hmm. And they replaced the stills. Remember, Scotch whiskey's been going for a long time. Glendronach was 1826, you know, when it got those stills. So they'll replace them exactly. You know, every little bash, everything, just the right, same dimensions for each distillery. Yeah. So they're the coppersmiths.
I gotcha.
Yeah. So quite often you see stills just driving along the road. Being replaced.
Yeah. That's awesome, though.
Because the copper does wear. I mean, copper's great. It's a great conductor. It's wonderful for flavor. because it catalyzes more fruit. It takes out the harsh elements. It's magical.
Absolutely. And so from there, you've got your hearts, and you're assuming you're filling barrels now.
You're filling barrels, okay. Absolutely.
Is it typical still 53-gallon, sometime ex-bourbon cask? Like, talk about the barrels.
Well, that's interesting, because if you go back to 1826, for example, back then, it was sherry principally that was imported into Scotland and bottles. And then the casks were just used as surplus. Before then, it was aqua vitae, water of life, clear spirit, that farmers made because they had surplus barley. Who wouldn't?
Yeah, right. We call that a little bit different around here, don't we? You know, we call that moonshine.
Yep.
Yeah, so it was serendipity, as many things in the Scotch industry, that these sherry casks in the main, but there was also port casks, claret casks, what at that point, were used to house the whiskey.
What's your favorite cask?
You can't ask me that now. No. I love wood. No, I mean, I've spent so much time analysing oak from around the world. I just love them all. I cannot say that. That's an impossible.
That's a cop out.
Yeah. I love the one I'm creating the whiskey with that day.
That day.
So gotcha. Today. Yeah. Yeah. Today.
You're fully present with that cask.
I'm fully present with each cask.
Gotcha.
Absolutely.
All right. So what was the last cask you used?
What was the last? I came to Louisville a few days ago, and the last cask I nosed from was definitely a Glendronach Pedro Ximenez cask. That was the last one.
PX Sherry, right? Is that what they call
PX.
It?
Yeah, yeah, okay. Pedro Ximenez. So that was the last one.
I'm learning.
But the beauty of Scotch, and it's part of its authenticity as well, is that we have this incredible selection. We have to use oak. Mm-hmm. Oak is the best.
Yeah.
You know, other woods just do not cut the mustard. They don't have the complexity. But apart from that, it can have been, you know, virgin oak we can use, just like in bourbon, or used casks. So, for example, with Benriach, we have the most eclectic collection of casks in Speyside, if not in the whole of Scotland. In Warehouse 13, we've got everything from the virgin oak to bourbon to rum to red wine, Bordeaux, Claret, Rioja, to Moscatel, Marsala, to Tawny Port, Ruby Port, to must have missed one out. Have I thought of
I think you,
of some more.
You hit more than I can come up with.
Come on, you can come
I don't even
up
know
some
what you're
guy.
Talking
Madeira,
about.
Madeira, Sauterne.
Okay.
Yep.
You've heard of these.
So you have all these different casks, and I guess we'll get into your magic of blending and well, let's talk about blending. So, like here, like the master distillers, like, you know, the celebrity or the, you know, the person that everyone looks to, like, but I hear over there, the master blender is kind of like the rock star.
Hitting away, nosing lots of casks. I nose about 5,000 samples per year from casks because it's such a complex spirit and no two casks are the same. Can be very different. So I've nosed about 150,000 casks in my lifetime so far. and counting. But it is the key part of delivering a perfectly balanced single malt is knowing, obviously, what wood to use, what your wood policy is, because we can reuse them more than once. And then the different recipes as such are almost in the cask selection. Mm-hmm. So the percentage you might use, a bourbon cask, virgin oak, although very few use virgin oak. We've got a real, we're on to a winner here with Brown-Forman because we have the source of virgin oak.
Oh, yeah.
It's absolutely amazing. It's great to play with and
tons
to,
of used
to work
barrels.
It out. And tons of
used barrels.
And great Daniel's barrels, Woodford Reserve, Old Forester, take your pick. So, so it's up to the master blender to kind of work out in conjunction, obviously, in collaboration with various people in the business.
So, like,
or influencing various people in the business to say, oh, I think this will really work and the consumer will love it. And, you know,
so, like, when you're doing a blend, portfolio. Are you like, all right, I went 30 bourbon, ex-bourbon blends, I went 35 ex Madeira blends and or Madeira cask finish and then to blend to make, you know, a brand or like Or is there no formula?
Well, it's really up to the whiskey. And to be honest, it's the whiskey that tells me.
Mm-hmm.
Because...
Just keep nosing. Keep nosing all day.
Keep nosing. It tells you. It tells you the story. It tells you what it wants to be. You just have to listen.
So you're not the guidance counselor. You, like Jackie says, when she gets barrels off, she can like taste them and be like, all right, you're going off to be the Old Forester. You're going to be the Prohibition series. You're going like here and there. But
yeah,
You actually let the whiskey tell you what to do with it.
Absolutely. You know, the character of the whiskey. The character of the whiskey tells me what to do with it. I mean, with Benriach, it's got a perfect balance of fruit, malt, and oak. You know, mm-hmm. And that is the key for me, is to create character, individuality, make it shine, just bring it all out, you know. With Benriach 10, for example, I don't know if this is an appropriate time to.
Yeah, might as well. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so Benriach 10.
It's after lunch.
With a career as a master distiller spanning almost 50 years, as well as a Kentucky Bourbon Hall of Famer and having over 100 million people taste his products, Steve Nally is a legend of bourbon who for years made Maker's Mark with expertise and precision. His latest project is with Bardstown Bourbon Company, a state-of-the-art distillery in the heart of the bourbon capital of the world. They're known for their popular Fusion series. However, they're adding something new in 2020 with a release named The Prisoner. It starts as a 9-year-old Tennessee bourbon that is then finished in The Prisoner Wine Company's French oak barrels for 18 months. The good news is you don't have to wait till next year to try it. Steve and the team at Bardstown Bourbon Company have teamed up with Rackhouse Whiskey Club. Rackhouse Whiskey Club is a Whiskey of the Month club on a mission to uncover the best flavors and stories that craft distilleries across the U.S. have to offer. Their December box features a full-size bottle of Bardstown's Fusion Series and a 200-milliliter bottle of The Prisoner. There's also some cool merch inside, and as always, with this membership, shipping is free. Get your hands on some early release Bardstown bourbon by signing up at RackhouseWhiskeyClub.com. Use code PURSUIT for $25 off your first box.
So, with Benriach 10, for example, I don't know if this is an appropriate time to...
Yeah, I might as well. As well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so Benriach 10.
It's after lunch.
So this is a core whiskey from Benriach. It's unpeated.
All right, just to make sure, we're going which way?
Left to right.
Left to right.
I'll know if you're not. Don't worry.
Yeah.
Well, the last time we did this, we were with Jackie, and I went right to left, and I was like, I'm not getting the same notes as you all, but, you know, that's me for not following directions.
So this is the gray label one that we're trying.
This is the core product. And this is a marriage of bourbon, so principally Jack Daniel's cask. That's the main constituent of this product. Also some sherry casks from European oak.
Mm-hmm.
And then also some of the Brown Forman Cooperage Virgin Oak, which is medium toasted and medium charred, the same as Jack Daniel's.
Yes.
Funny you talk about fruit, a smell like Hawaiian punch or like, you know, like beachy pineapple, like, like a
some toasted coconut, something like that.
The more you nose it, the more fruit you're going to get. It just keeps on giving. Benriach, it just like, it's so fruit laden.
It's like a pina colada or something.
Yeah. Well, you get pina colada.
Yep.
I get an apple orchard.
Can I work with
ripening,
you?
Ripening peaches.
Yeah, Ryan will come up with the best tasting notes for you, I promise.
I know. I think everything I had as a child, and I'm like, all right, we're going to find this in the whiskey, you know.
Yeah, and you find it.
I did. Well, I didn't have pina coladas when I was a child, but but I did have Hawaiian punch.
Yeah.
Have you ever had Hawaiian punch?
Yeah.
Okay, cool.
I know what you're talking about.
We're all relatable still. Okay. Yeah.
So very, very, very fruity.
Yes, very
from
fruity.
From those pear-shaped cells.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. You know? Beautiful. And you got, some people who drink wine really love this. So, you know, if you come in from Chablis or, you know, Chardonnay, you know that fruitiness is very, very distinctive. Layers of fruit.
Mm-hmm. What kind of proof are we looking at on this?
This is 43% alcohol, which is 86 degrees proof.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a good strength. It's just the right strength to keep the fruit, malt, and oak in perfect balance.
So like with scotch, like bourbon, they typically like, all right, 4 years, we can start selling this. When are you all like, we can start selling this? At what
well,
age?
Legally, it can be from 3 years old.
Okay.
Okay.
But I would never sell a single malt 3 years old because the complexity is so much richer. It just gives you more. By 10 years old.
Mm-hmm. So at three years, is that for the single malt or to be called a scotch? It has to be at least 3 years old.
For both.
Okay.
So any scotch whiskey, be it a blend of malt and grain, because we do have grain distilleries as well.
I guess we really talk about that, like what other kind of grains are used.
Oh, no. But we focus on the single malt because that's where all the flavor is.
Gotcha.
So
do you look at other grains then as like filler? Like it doesn't really have, it doesn't bring as much complexity or character to a scotch.
Well, the scotch whiskey industry was built on the complexity of single malt.
Mm-hmm.
And the grain, was pretty much there as a filler.
I gotcha. See?
You know, grain's cheaper.
So like
single malt is, you know, expensive to make. It's a batch process. It's handcrafted. It's, you know, it's barley is expensive.
I also want to talk about aging a little bit, too.
That's what I was going to ask.
Because it seems that barrels seem to, like, retain a lot more liquid over in Scotland, you know, the longer they sit. I mean, you've got scotches that are 20, 30, 40, 50 years old.
June.
Yeah. It's hotter than hell. Yeah.
And so
it never gets that hot in Scotland.
I know. I know. Sometimes I wish I lived there because it'd be so easy to grow grass. In Scotland,
it is.
It's like the perfect grass weather, you know.
We've got.
I guess that's why it's the birthplace
landscape.
Of golf.
You have an incredible landscape.
Yeah.
In Scotland, it's so lush, and it's perfect for barley as well on the east coast, and then peat on the west coast.
Mm-hmm.
What was your question?
Well, sorry, I always do that. I distract people. It's ADD.
It's okay.
How did we get onto grass?
I was like, we were talking about how hot it is here versus Scotland. And I'm like, Scotland's the perfect place to grow grass because grass here in June or July, it's like, it hates it. But it's good for bourbon because it's evaporating and moving in and out of the barrel, you know.
And so. I guess that was the question more along the lines of evaporation. I mean, are you seeing a lot of evaporation lost over in Scotland that you would compared to like bourbon that's coming from Ohio, Tennessee, Kentucky.
What's considered we call it a short barrel here, you know, like if it's like below like 100 bottles, we're like, ooh, that's a short barrel. That one's going to be good. Do you have those in Scotland?
Yeah, absolutely. We lose about, on average for the whole industry, and it does vary, and then we get into another discussion. We lose about 2% of the volume in liters of alcohol per year of the original cask.
Which is...
Okay.
We're about, 5 to 8%, I think, is kind of what you see around here. At least it's the first year, I think it's upwards double digits. But then after that, it kind of settles down a little bit.
Yeah. So what that means, because it's a very slow reduction, and also the alcohol strength goes down. I know in bourbon it goes up.
Oh, really?
For a spell. Yeah. Did you not know that?
No.
Oh, there you go.
I told you we're coming in this all green. So I had no idea.
Yeah. So the alcohol strength goes down. And that means that you're extracting different things from the oak cask the longer you leave it. Because that strength's going down, but you're only losing 2% volume, meaning that you can leave it for longer. It's got more interaction with the wood, more oxidation, most importantly, for single malt, because that gives you the elegance, the complexity, the top notes, et cetera, the finesse that you find in a single malt.
Mm-hmm.
I am amazed by how much different flavor notes you get in this, you know, 86 proof 10-year, what is this, the single malt? Yeah,
Benriach, 10-year-old.
There's a lot going on. It's like, it's incredible the flavors you kind of get out of it. Like I said, we're pretty amateur in scotch, and, you know, most of the scotch I've had have been very heavy peated. So it's like really pungent, kind of earthy, like smoky type. Mm-hmm. This is definitely more on the fruitier side, more like Captain Crunch berries. Have you ever had Captain Crunch? With the berries in them. Sorry. Talking to American.
But I can imagine what you're enjoying.
Well, so it's kind of like, you know, cereal and the milk with kind of a little sugary substance.
Yeah.
And then you have like a really sugary berries inside.
Absolutely.
See? Nailed it.
See? That is the 10-year-old.
Cheers. Or
another delicacy here in Kentucky, fruit pizza. I just discovered that. I was like, fruit pizza. Never heard of such
a
thing.
A big sugar cookie with the cream cheese icing and kiwis and all that stuff.
Oh, I had that with this whiskey for lunch.
Oh, there you go.
See, we're on the same wavelength of flavor.
And it
profiles.
Was just amazing because you get the fruit, you get the malt, which is like the creaminess of custard and vanilla.
Yeah.
And then you get the yolk, which is like the toasted almond on top and that lovely pastry base.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. You know, so layered. Have you tried it yet?
Fruit pizza?
Have you tried this?
Oh,
have you tried
them
all?
Oh, yeah.
I noticed you having a sip.
Oh, yeah. We've all been drinking.
Kenny?
Ryan.
Yeah.
And then we have both been drinking, yes.
You've both, well, I haven't yet. So slanges, we say.
Oh.
Or slangeva.
Slangeva.
Slangeva. Yeah.
Sounds good to me.
Cheers.
Yeah, fruit pizza.
Mm-hmm. Like, yeah, so we need a new pairing. Take that one back to Scotland.
I will.
Yeah.
Except I probably need to visit our local patisserie.
Oh, yeah. Maybe they can do it for you.
For the fruit pizza, but I don't think they call it that. But it is. It's just like a bakery. And that's the beauty of Benriet, because it's in a sweet spot between the mountain and the sea, and it has the perfect environment to give you this balance of fruit, malt, and oak. If you go up the hill a bit to other distilleries, you get a little more kind of delicate fruit, but without the malt. And if you go down, it gets a bit more oily and it loses the fruit. So we have the perfect balance to
So this is Ben, so it's a little higher up,
yeah,
right?
Yeah,
right,
yeah.
Cool.
But this
I like the higher up.
Yeah,
good
job,
higher up. Let's go.
Let's talk about the next Ben. And while I do that,
this is the same distillery.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, it's the same distillery.
I get to be like Willy Wonka.
Different expression. So talk about the different expression here. And this is the black label for anybody that's wondering what we're talking about.
For anyone that's curious, we have Curiositas. Anyone that's curious about peat. Because this is the peated
Benriet. Oh, there it is. Yep.
And going back to the 1970s, this is the only
Speyside.
This is the only Speyside to have peated malt going back to the 1970s in all of Speyside. So our peat is wood rich.
There has to be a ton of people that love the taste and the smell of peat. And I don't know. For me, it's hard to kind of gravitate towards. Like, I'm a more fan of the other Ben versus the peated Ben. But I think this is also could have been my...
It's our upbringing.
You know, I don't know if it's our upbringing. It could be, our palate's not adjusted to it. You know, because bourbon's very sweet.
We've had to be fruit pizzas.
Yeah, maybe that's what it is. But, you know, we come from bourbon, so it's very sweet.
But what about the barbecues?
That's true, too. Smoky. Mm-hmm. I love smoked meats.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
charcuterie meats.
He likes to smoke meat. He's an amateur.
I got my green egg. I do some brisket, some pulled pork, and some ribs. Yeah,
yeah.
Absolutely. It does smell like that.
It does. And do you have any forest? Do you have forests here?
We have Burnham Forest.
Mm-hmm. So
just south of us.
The forest, were either of you Boy Scouts?
I started Tiger Scout, but then I started playing baseball.
Maybe I was a Cub. That's about it. I never really made it to Eagle.
So did you ever have the pleasure of maybe... You know, as you aged as well, of having a little campfire in the forest.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
I had flint and steel at one point. I think that was the coolest thing I ever got out of Boy Scouts was actually having my
flint and steel.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Being able to actually create a fire with that. Like, just, you know.
Well, have a sniff.
Take
you back there. It will take you back there. You're in that forest.
You do feel like
with
you're
your
fire.
Flint and steel.
Mm-hmm.
You've got some marshmallows being toasted. Oh, you've got some sugar maple in there as well.
The sugar maple.
Mm-hmm.
It's just so radically different than what we usually drink. You know, that's why it's still like coming to me.
But it's just because you haven't tried it.
You need to try it.
Open your mind.
I knew I was coming
into
this.
Look at the diversity of flavor we've got here.
Ben is the gateway gateway scotch.
Gateway scotch,
and then this is like.
Big Ben.
Yeah, Big Ben.
Well, Big Ben is a little bit higher in strength as well. It's 46% alcohol, non-chill filtered, and 92 degrees.
Gotcha. Where are they coming out of the barrel typically at? You didn't already say that, did you?
No, I didn't.
We know they go down.
Down. Okay, so over 10 years, we're probably going to go from the filling strength of around 63.5%.
Did you say 163.5 is what you... go into the barrel at?
63.5%, which is 137. Mm-hmm. I think degrees
I'm not
proof.
At math either.
137 degrees proof. And then it goes down to, it loses over 10 years about 5% alcohol. So it'll go down to about 58, 59.
Okay.
Typically. Depends where it is in the warehouse.
Mm-hmm.
Depends which warehouse it is.
Yeah.
In. size of the warehouse. Traditional dunnage or tall.
Is there an idea in the Scotch world of like single barrels? Like, is that a thing?
Oh, yes. Glendronach and Benriach, we do single barrels for customers, for retailers, you know, some of the specialist shops.
So
you will see the single cast. Yeah,
do you do barrel casks.
Single barrels? Yeah, absolutely. And we've got cast strength expressions as well. So, yeah, to all.
All right,
from the connoisseur. But this is 46, 92 degrees proof.
Cheers on this one. Yeah.
What was that saying?
Slangeva.
All right. Oh, yeah, this one reminds me of like my, I smoke a turkey every year for Thanksgiving, and it has this like Cajun rub that I put on it. It's like kind of real spicy and kind of smoky. So like reminds me of that.
And this is bourbon cask. So this is Jack Daniel's cask. You know?
Well, no wonder.
So it's still.
Like I feel like I'm branching out. I feel so proud of myself right now.
But it's still so fruity. That's why you're loving it, because it's still got the sweetness. Remember, I said it was the peat is wood rich, so you're just like smoking wood.
Yep.
And then
you got the campfire up front. You got the campfire, on the back.
And then unlike the Islay malts, we are very fruit laden, even in distillation. So we get all that fruit in there as well as the smoke.
Mm-hmm.
So
it's like smoking a fruit pizza.
Smoking a fruit pizza, I love it.
Yep,
get it on the camp.
Everything goes back to the fruit pizza around here.
Yep. Oh, and maybe some bananas on the barbecue with some chocolate in them as well. Ooh. Dark chocolate, dark chocolate.
Have you had banana croquettes yet? Since you've been to Kentucky,
I've not had the pleasure.
Oh wow, change your life.
Put on
tonight.
The next.
I'm going to ask for a banana croquette.
It's a banana rolled in mayonnaise, and then
you make it sound so good,
and then you put crushed up peanuts on it. It's magical. I promise.
Barbecue that, and this is it
exactly
in a glass.
Yep, it's right here. Nailed it.
You know, you just have to open your minds in Kentucky to the flavors that you enjoy in your food.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
so I guess another question that it kind of, you know, kind of related back to bourbon a little bit is, with inside of bourbon, we have this idea of like, oh, like there's a huge shortage, like all these higher aged expressions are getting very, very hard to find, and they're very, very expensive, and everybody rushes and jumps, and like there's this huge influx of people that are really starting to buy. Now, do you see that still happening like in the Scotch world, or is it Scotch has just been around for so long, it's had the luxury of time and stocks, and that you're able to still put out 10, 20, 30-year-old expressions. And
they've been aging since 1400.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
So, you know.
May I ask, is there any actually left in the barrel in Kentucky after 10, 15, 20 years?
Yeah.
Not much.
After, I'd say, what was it? I think, you know, we know some distilleries around. They have some 15, 20-year-old releases, but you're looking at 70 to 95 bottles in the barrel.
At cash strength,
something like that. You talk to Chris Morris, we've talked about before, and birthday bourbons and stuff like that with the heat cycled warehouses, that there are times at even 12 years old that they have empty casks.
Yeah.
So I would imagine.
I think Chris just forgot to put the plug back in.
Yeah. I would imagine with virgin oak, there would just be wood, and more wood,
mm-hmm.
and lots of wood.
Yeah.
I would imagine for a very long.
Mm-hmm. Definitely after time. Like
it takes
14,
a lot of oak
15,
character.
You're like, all right, this is very tannicky, very mm-hmm. like bitter kind of finish to it. So there's like
we're always going for balance. I mean, the fact that single malt Benriach is so fruit laden, it means that with maturation over a long time, you're just getting keeping that balance, converting the wood into softer flavors. And you get a lot of reactions happening rather than just extraction. So it's very, very complex. But in answer to your question, yeah, we've got some older stocks, and we're very lucky at Benriach because it started peating in 1972 again. And we've got stocks going back to then of the peated malt. So we've got 21-year-old Temporis as well. It's fully peated, but tastes like caramelized pear. It's incredible.
Mm.
And honey. Honey, sugar, maple, and toasted.
I've never had a pear caramelized. I should get,
there you go.
Get on it.
I know.
Yeah, it's amazing, you know? So
smoke
you think it was really
yeah.
peaty, but, you know, it's not. And, yeah, so we have all this wonderful whiskey that for people to discover in flavor, you know? People are just waking up to malt.
Mm-hmm. Well, so I guess, yeah, go ahead, Ryan.
Well, I was going to say, in these, so what, like, is a typical barrel dump in these blends? Like, how many barrels are...
Well, yeah, typically,
in a typical batch.
Yeah, and Ben Riach, a typical batch would be around 50 to 60.
Oh, okay.
It's pretty, so pretty small then. Yeah, it's a small batch.
Yeah, 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 yeah. I mean, it's a pretty small batch, single malt per bottling. And obviously, I want to keep it consistent as well each time. Mm-hmm. So, yeah.
Very cool. Well,
yeah, so we've got mostly bourbon. Bourbon for the Curiositas, the 10-year-old, was the virgin oak, the sherry, and the bourbon.
Mm-hmm.
And we've got lots more expressions beside using wine casks, etc.
Oh,
so,
yes.
Yeah, I get to play. So you're getting, like, I mean, it is like a patisserie. You get so much different flavor going on. You just get into that cake shop.
Is it like here where you have like a, like a, I don't know why this word comes to my accountability partners, or like tasting panel. That's what I'm looking for, to like, you know, just make sure that everything you're blending is consistent with the brand. Yeah, you know,
is it all Rachel, or is there a team behind you as well? That's sort of
Would
helping.
You like to be on the team?
I do. I think I've passed. I think I could do well just for pizza, you know?
No, I've got an assistant. Okay. I do have an assistant.
Just one?
Just one assistant.
Oh, wow.
Gotcha. On the flavor side.
Because typically here, there's like a panel of like...
It's like five or six?
Five or six people.
However, you know, the distillery team as well, everyone gets involved.
I gotcha. Gotcha. They know what the final product is. And speaking of final product, let's talk about the last one we have on our right, which is the Glendronic. So talk about what this is and really what this expression is as well.
Yeah, you said it so perfectly. I Glendronic.
You know, 55 minutes later, I think I figured it out. So.
Yeah. Well, that means Valley of the Brambles. You've heard of Brambles?
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 No.
Blackberries. We have lots of blackberries there.
Oh, okay.
Around the distillery. It's beautiful. It's in the Highlands, but it's in a valley in the Highlands. I was born very close to the distillery, Ooh. Brought up there. It's the richest, most abundant landscape for agriculture. You'd love it. It's great soil, great, just best barley in Scotland near Glendronic Distillery. And primarily we use sherry casks. That's what really sets us apart.
Mm-hmm.
We
smells
use
like
sherry
apple
casks.
Juice.
Oh, there you go.
Really going hard with the apples here.
Mott's.
Yeah.
Like applesauce or something.
Well, they're not baked. Because what?
No, they're not baked.
They're not baked.
No, they're just freshly squeezed.
There you go.
Yep.
Oh, well. Well, I get, everyone's nose is different, of course.
Yeah. Sorry.
And,
I'm off the team now.
Yeah, I mean, our stills.
She said yes.
We've got saxophone-shaped stills,
mm-hmm.
which means that we have a robust, kind of earthy character. And on top of that, we've got all these fruits, which you're picking up. But bramble fruits is quite dominant, I think. Apricots, figs, all that going on. Kind of soft
apricots.
Fruits and the darker fruits come through. So with Glendronic, we source Spanish oak from Spain, from Galicia. Is filled with two types of sherry primarily. Pedro Ximenez and Oloroso. And Pedro Ximenez, I think we buy the most Pedro Ximenez casks in the industry, because Pedro Ximenez is known as the king of sherries.
Okay.
And it gives you a really unctuous kind of sweetness, dates, raisins, dark chocolate, mm-hmm. all of that going on. And the really sweet. And then the Oloroso is drier and nuttier. So we, for the 12-year-old, have 12-year-old Pedro Ximenez, 12-year-old Oloroso, and we bring them together, and the combination is the perfect balance for Glendronic.
So a question about when you're using, you know, XPX and Oloroso barrels and stuff like that, because you use them multiple times over, is there like a... Because you're going to only extract so much of that flavor, you're not going to get it every single time. So it's like... Is there like a chalk line? It's like you like 1, 2, 3, like we've used this three times. Yeah. And so, you know, like we need one that's a first new fill or a few new fills to add into this to kind of keep that sort of consistency to it.
Yeah, absolutely. It's just.
So it is a chalk line.
Yep.
I've got a flight path I'm working on because obviously as volume grows, and it will, people love Glendronic. We're disgorging casks for the 12-year-old, and they're all first fill.
Mm-hmm.
Pedro Ximenez and Oloroso, you did ask, in this. first fill. We disgorge those, and then we'll maybe refill them with new make, the new fill.
Mm-hmm.
And then I know that it's going to take longer for a second fill. So it might be 18 years or more, or I might even have to re-rack it back into fill.
If it's not
worked as well, or it's not extracting enough. But Spanish oak is incredibly deep in color and tannins. It's Spanish oak cast lasts a long time.
Mm-hmm.
So typically in the industry, going back to the 19th century, they would have been used 3, 4, or 5 times.
Wow.
You know, and they would have still been strong. They wouldn't have leaked, etc. They're solid. They've got thick staves. They're big casks. But we only use them twice, really. And if I was to fill it a third time, I would
probably not going to get much out of it. Yeah,
I would re-rack it after a few years.
What do you mean re-rack?
I take the whiskey out of that cask and put it into first fill.
Gotcha. Okay.
So, you know, it's like if you've got kids, you know, if they're doing well at school, you leave them at that school and they're doing well and they're flourishing and they're, you know, becoming great individuals. If they're not doing so well at that school, you might take it out and put it into a different school.
Mm-hmm.
Rachel, you hit it out of the park with this one. This one's
Thank
awesome.
You.
You like the Glen?
Yes.
The Glentronic?
I think I'm a Glen fan. I like the valleys in the Highlands.
Yeah. This well, the is, thing about Glendronic is I'm a judge at spirits competitions.
Okay.
And for me, the hallmark of fine whiskey, full stop, but especially finest single malt, is that it must be complex, balanced, loads of character, and always deliver more on the taste than on the nose.
Yeah.
Exceed expectations every time.
This reminds me of like a apple cider with all the, you know, the... You get the cinnamon sticks and the mulling spices all in there, kind of, and just like a little bit fruitier version of that, but really
very
hitting
spicy.
That
you're getting the spice from the Oloroso cask,
mm-hmm.
so you could get warm gingerbread baking mm-hmm. in the oven. Cinnamon sticks, absolutely melt. Great for Christmas. This
everything
is
for
like,
fall for me, like mm-hmm. the way I think about
fall or, yeah. or Christmas in a glass, you know. Or yeah, definitely fall as well. So you get a nuttiness at the back of the palate from the Oloroso. Mm-hmm. So when you taste it, I better just have another sip.
Yeah, go for it. Yeah, I guess I got another question about, because I know that Glendronic has a really big kind of cult following sort of behind it too. Like it's one of the most popular brands that are out there. And I know
how do I join?
I know there was probably a year, maybe a year and a half ago, there was a release called like 1993. Kind of talk about sort of that and sort of some of these sort of special releases that are coming out that a lot of these sort of really whiskey nerds and scotch nerds are really going for.
Yeah, I mean, the beauty of Glendronic is that it's traditional and we haven't changed anything. So that's why I call it, it's kind of old style.
Mm-hmm.
And what that means is you're working in nature. And obviously we do have seasons. So for example, in the spring and the spirit of the still, I might get a little bit more kind of like vines and almost a grapey quality from malt. It's incredible. And then into June, I'll get more kind of dark fruit and jammy. Into October and autumn and the fall, you get more of this nutty tobacco leaf leather. And it's incredible. Yeah. So what does this mean? Well, obviously, when I create 12-year-olds, I'm using whiskey from all the seasons and I'm giving that perfect balanced taste, getting all that complexity that you love. With the single casks, mm-hmm. individual cask bottlings, you know, it's giving the connoisseurs an opportunity to, wow, they're appreciating all these different complex flavors that are coming through in different casks at different times. They're getting that chance to really have a taste of the complexity of Glendronic in different individual casks. So it might be a cask that's more robust, more full-bodied and oily, you know, Oloroso maybe from November.
Mm-hmm.
Or it might be one that's a bit more spicy from the winter. Or maybe one that's just a bit more jammy from the summer.
I like
you
jammy.
Know?
Mm-hmm. No, that's awesome.
So,
really
yeah. So, and they love discussing it. They love it. But you know your stuff.
Listen, I read a few forums and I see what people are talking about, what they're buying, and I just get curious, and that's just one of the things that happen.
But now, it's got quite a following. Glendronach has got quite a following, and more are gravitating. And I think, you know, with this quality, I think people in Kentucky are going to love it.
Yeah, and this one actually, you know, it has a little bit of a darker and richer color than the Ben. But
yeah, well, the Ben and Benriach and Glendronach are all natural color, and that means it's just from the cask, naturally cask imparted color. Other malts might have caramel added, for example, but you know, it's all natural for us. Mm-hmm. So the color that you see is coming from the Spanish oak, Pedro Jimenez Oloroso sherry. So you get a more intense color.
Well, you know, that's awesome. And thank you so much for the information. And, you know, also thank you so much for flying all the way to Scotland to have this interview with us in Louisville. Yeah. I mean, this was a pleasure for us. So, I know it was definitely an honor for us to actually have you on here, because there's probably so many people in the Scotch world that know who you are. And it was a pleasure for us to finally have this introduction from somebody like you to say, you know, really lead us through a Scotch tasting like this. So it was really an honor.
That's absolutely my pleasure to be with you. And I hope I've managed to convert at least one of you to add single malt Scotch to your repertoire.
I think a Glen and a Ben might be in the ticket here for me. So I agree.
Glen and a Ben.
A Glen and a Ben. Yeah. So you're going for the Ben 10.
Yeah. Glen and a Ben.
I agree. I mean, this Glendronach is really good. And then I'm still not on board with the peat yet. Maybe it's like everything else. It just
takes
time.
How'd you like your coffee?
I don't drink coffee.
You didn't drink coffee.
How'd you like your coffee?
I either like it like black, nothing in it, like Peru or Nicaraguan blends, like they're real kind of fruity, like tannicky kind of. Or I like it as an almond milk latte, where you kind of get the nuttiness.
See, that's why you like them both.
But I don't like milk with coffee, because it kind of like brings it down.
See, you like both, Ben's, don't you? You like the smoky one too. You were there in the forest.
I was in the forest, in the camp, you know,
you
roasting
there.
My turkey and marshmallows.
You were.
Yep.
See, it's interesting, because you don't like coffee, because people will love coffee and black coffee, the tannins and the coffee and that kind of lovely lingering taste, you know? They love peated whiskey.
Mm-hmm.
They love the peated Ben.
Yeah. The good thing about
we're team peat Ben, he's team no peat.
With anything else, and when you're tasting whiskey and you're growing with whiskey, you know, everything is, you know, you get
a
fluid to it. You get a progression. And, you know, I remember the first time I had a peated whiskey and I was just, or a peated Scotch, and I was like, there's no way. Like, why would people even drink this? And now I'm sitting here talking with you and we're going through it, and you're trying to take me back to those memories and the times around a campfire, and you can actually, you can get some of that from it.
Kenny's never been around a campfire. He's in tech.
I'm a city boy.
You need to take him. You need to take him to the forest.
He has electric fires in his house.
Take him to the forest.
Yeah, we just use it. We flip the switch and it comes on. Yeah, that's how
it must be curious. You need to take your drama curiosity. Yeah.
Once you get a campfire, you can join our team on tasting panel.
We can have a picnic.
Okay.
We can take some fruit pizza as well. With our Ben 10.
We'll come over to Scotland. We'll bring our fruit pizzas and we'll go and visit the distilleries with you. How about that? Does it sound like a good deal?
Absolutely.
Okay.
Can't wait to see you. You must come and visit us.
Absolutely. We'd love to make it happen.
Our distilleries are very close. They're only like half an hour apart.
Well,
so it's easy. You can do both.
It's like here to Bardstown.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Why not?
Yeah.
So Rachel, thank you again for coming on the show today. Like I said, it was a true honor, especially from somebody of your caliber and your history of being able to guide us through this. It was really fantastic. So Ryan, go ahead and start. Oh, actually, I want you to also get an opportunity for anybody else that's out there that wants to learn more about you or wants to follow you on social media. What are your...
Are you an Instagrammer or...
I am.
Twitter, yeah, kind of talk about
Facebook
how people
or,
can get in contact.
Snapchat.
Well, I'm Lady Blender on
Twitter. Yep.
On Instagram, I'm RB Whiskey Maker.
I like it.
There we go.
There you go.
So now you go follow her, and you can kind of get an idea of the Glens and the Bens and everything we've been talking about today. So it's a fantastic opportunity.
But our malts also have Facebook sites. I have to say, our malts, Benriach and Glendronach, also, they have Facebook sites, and they're on Instagram.
And one thing I forgot to ask was...
And Glenglassaugh.
Yeah, Glenglassaugh.
Did I say it right?
And Glenglassaugh is two.
Glenglassaugh, we've not even tasted.
And, you know,
one thing I forgot
next
to ask,
time,
what are the
next
price
time.
Points? Like, if somebody were to, you know...
Okay, so the Ben 10.
Oh, yeah, we got to take it to the
Ben
American
10
dollars.
Is $60 yep. a bottle. Yeah, roundabout. Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. And Curiositas and the Glendronach 12. Yeah, they're all around about $60.
Oh, that's
so you just
great
need
value.
to find your malt, you know? And we've got a malt for everyone, you know?
Find your malt.
I was
going to
say,
that.
That's a t-shirt. It's a t-shirt in the making right there.
So, yeah. You know, whether
Glenn
you like
Ben
fruit.
And find your malt. Find your malt with Glenn and Ben. There you go.
That's what you need to
You're
do.
Welcome, Brown-Forman.
Yeah, yeah.
Bill's in the mail. No, absolutely. Thank you so much. This was an honor and a lot of fun. I think we had a good time. And
I had a good time. Thank
can't
you
wait
for...
to join your team. And, you know, we'll do a bunch of tastings together, put the Glen and Ben's out there for everyone to like. But no, I didn't know anything about Scotch coming into this. So it was
me
just
neither.
Interesting for me to sit here and chat with you about it. And now I'm with me, once I've kind of break that initial hurdle, now it's like a deep dive. And, like, let's nerd out as much as we can about it. So I'm definitely a big fan of Glen and Ben. So appreciate you taking the time and coming to see us across the pond. So with that, we'll see you all next time.
Cheers.
Thanks for having me.